Wednesday afternoon, Shari Yichada Maisa, Yud Ches Elul, Wednesday afternoon. Okay, we're going to spend, please forgive me for taking away your social time. We have to find the place. It's confusing for two reasons. First of all, we're going to skip today, which I don't like doing, and I never do, but never say never. So we're going to skip. And I'm going to give a sikum, a summary of what we're skipping, and then we're going to move on in the text. But besides that, there are printings. There's a whole section missing. In Rav Kapach's Chavis Halvavus, I've mentioned, he has a translation. So it's there. In the Lev Tov, it's not there. I'm not sure which printings have it and which printings don't. But we're going to skip it in any event. So I just want to make sure that we are literally on the same page. So, okay. So we're in Chavis Halvavus, Shar Yichud HaMaisa, and we're in Perakei. And we've been through a lot of the enticements of the Yetzer Hara. We're going to move very quickly on this last section. In the last section that we started, and I'm sure it's a new paragraph, you don't even have to look in now, because I'm giving a summary of his last point that we learned, and the points that we are not going to learn inside, and then we'll pick it up in around 10 to 15 minutes. We'll pick it up inside learning the text again. And the text obviously will be past the point of where some Sfarim have that whole section missing, and some Sfarim, so it won't be relevant. So now you sit back, relax, enjoy the air conditioning, fall asleep, whatever you want. After he gave a whole bunch of ideas that the Yetzer Hara implants in our minds, which are, we said, philosophical and theological, intellectual, religious, he moves on to a different point, but maybe not entirely a different point. We're not learning inside, Mrs. Loring. We're not learning inside now. I'm giving a sequel, and we're going to skip a lot, and then I'm going to pick it up from the text. And like the next level, really, though, he's talking about ma'aminim, people that believe in everything, and they believe in Olam Haba, and they believe in Schar Va'Onesh, and they believe Hashem Echad, and they believe in everything, and the Yetzer Hara makes them lazy. That's his lashon. That's his next point. The next enticement of the Yetzer Hara is to involve you and busy us all in Olam Hazeh, and we know that you could get very busy in Olam Hazeh between the things that we indeed physically need, because we need so much, and we're involved in the things that we need, whether it's a man who has to go to work, and he has to involve himself in Olam Hazeh, because he has to earn money, and that takes up most of his day, and then he has to sleep, right? So, you know, it's not everybody that can be in Kolel, and forget about Kolel, not everybody could do what the Rambam says, which is that a Balabayas who has to work does not have to learn a whole day. 6-7 hours will be sufficient. And we're not quite sure, you know. But it's a standard of living. But this part is true. You know, he says, Yetzer Hara gets you used to the idea that the Ikar is Olam Hazeh, and we start wanting things, we start feeling like we need things that we don't really need. They are mosrus, they are, call them luxuries, but when we say the word luxury, we think maybe of a mink coat or a fur coat. You say, luxuries, I don't have any luxuries. A luxury in the Chavis Halvavus is lexicon, is anything we're familiar with these words. It's what you don't need, what you want. If you want what you need, that's okay. But there's what you want, and you don't need it. And we said, yes, it's somewhat subjective because one person's want might be another person's need. But the point is that the Yetzer Hara, you know, you look at the world, the people that are choshev in the world are not the people who are osuk in avodas Hashem. The people who are choshev in the world are people that are rich, that are wealthy, that have a lot of things that people look up to. They're a person of letters, they have a BA, an MA, a BA, a PhD. We're all affected by it. You say, this person, rabbi, doctor, we have a little more respect than if we just say rabbi. We do. Don't contradict me, okay? Even if I'm wrong. Wow. And the Chavis HaLevavos talks about that wow. And we're drawn to it. And little by little, the Yetzer Hara wants us to be machshiv olam hazeh, and to busy ourselves with olam hazeh. And maybe he'll say, don't go overboard, and take it easy, you're living in this world, and he'll start quoting you Gemaras. Oh, he's such a Talmud Chacham, the Yetzer Hara. He'll say that Rebbe said you have to, if Hashem put something in this world, you have to enjoy it. And Rav Shamsha Nafal Hirsch talked about the Alps. And he'll dray a cup until you are, and he has a foothold because we're living in this world. So, you know, so we have to involve ourselves in it. But he makes it chashuv, and then he, this is what people look up to, this is what we aspire to. So maybe we've moved out of the 50s and 60s when I grew up, when every Jewish mother wanted her son to be a doctor. Maybe we've moved away from that. That's because the doctors now are on socialized medicine. They don't earn so much money anymore. But what are we machshiv? What are our values? Are we really? And once he gets us to value what goes on in Olam Hazeh, then, and we look up to certain people, and we look up to certain people, and we make role models out of certain people, or we're machshiv then, and then little by little he says, so what do you need this one, what do you need that for? And you have to involve yourself in, you see what's choshev in the world, and once you've tasted it a little, he says, it's an acquired taste, and you want more of it, and once you get used to the idea of having more than you need, then you want more and more and more. And he talks about eating out, he talks about having fine clothing, he talks about emulating the sarim, and their entourages, and you just involve yourself. Like I said, you involve yourself. You just busy yourself with olam hazeh things. That's his next point. Okay. Then he then goes on, and here's where it's missing a section. So I'll just, he segues almost into a completely different point. It's like the next point. We talk about that the Chavis HaLevavos is madgish and emphasizes very much the power of seichel, and he wants us to use our seichel, and he wants us to be rational beings and to be ovid Hashem with our rational faculties, and to bring up questions and to search for answers, and so on and so forth. Now he says, this is another. He doesn't call it an enticement of the Yetzer Hara. He makes an observation, and it's a very powerful observation. He says that sometimes you're better off just with a fallback. Make sure you have a fallback position of emunah pshuta. Let's talk about that, because certainly it's ideal to use your seichel. He reiterates, it's ideal to use your seichel and to be knowledgeable and to know and to question and to answer. But it's dangerous. It is dangerous. And if you're not strong, then you could really, really get messed up, because questions will come up that you can't answer. And what's really happening, he says, either you're simply not smart enough to come up with the answers, and instead of going to someone smarter than you and finding out the answers, so it affects you. You say, no, taka, I never thought of that. Taka, I wonder. Many times what's really happening is that the seichel is a prisoner to your desires, right? In the famous statement of, it doesn't matter who said it, probably no one ever said it. It's an apocryphal story, but it's a very great statement. And that is, someone came to whoever it is with a whole bunch of, someone that went off the derech, we'll call it, and he had a whole bunch of questions. And he said, you know, what do you have to say? So he says, I don't have anything to say to you. What do you mean? He says, if you have questions, I have answers. But you don't have questions, you have answers. You are answering why you're acting, why you're living the way you're living. To answers, I don't have any answers. I only have answers to questions. And that's very sharply put, very well put. And the Chavis Halvavos actually makes that point here. He doesn't use such a sharp retort. But he says, that's the second danger. That when you use your seichel might be a prisoner of your ritzonos, and therefore you're not really thinking straight. And this is really how most Baalei Mussar and Baalei Machshava explain the apikursus and the atheism and the warped thinking of so many people out there, whether it's Jews or non-Jews or non-religious Jews who are in a position to know. We're not talking about regular, let's say, people who are attacker prisoners, but the people who are in a position to know. And really what they're doing is they're giving answers, not questions. And they want to justify, you know, they don't want to live a certain way. They don't want to live with what they see as restrictions. What is the Chavis Halvavos' point here? He's saying that many times the seichel, it's a two-edged sword. That's what we call it. It's a two-edged sword. Certainly it's ideal, and that's what you should use, but realize that you're going to bump up. What are you going to do? Have a game plan for when you bump up against a question that you don't have the answer for. And now and if everything is just seichel, 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 now, so what are you going to do? Are you going to admit that you don't know, but there are people out there that do know? Are you going to... So he says, fall back on Emunah Pshuta, you know, because not everyone knows everything. Not every question can be answered. Chavis Halvavos himself says, way back when in Shar HaYichud, with all of his... I mean, he spends the entire first Shar proving Hashem's existence and Hashem's oneness in the philosophy of his day, with the philosophy of his day, with the philosophical arguments of his day. But he himself says there that there's nothing absolutely compelling. Nothing is as compelling. Nothing. He doesn't know of anything as compelling as a mathematical proof. You know, we say A squared plus B squared equals C squared. He says, I don't have that for you. At some point, you have to make a leap of faith. Or you could say that it's just completely irrational to think that there's no Hashem. Irrational, totally. Nobody in his right mind would think there's no Hashem, or that Hashem doesn't have a game plan for us how we should live, or that Torah Mesinai is true, right? It's just not logical, not rational. We live no other part of our lives with the infinitesimal possibility, you know. But he says, I don't have for you a mathematical proof. Mathematical proof in the Bria apparently is 100%. I say apparently because I don't know math well enough to really know. I know there's a thing called imaginary numbers. So there's something imaginary out there in math. So he says you have to have a fallback position. You have to have either Emunah Pshuta or you're strong enough to say, I don't know and I'm going to go find out. But most people, I don't know most, many, it's called an agenda, right? If you ever, anything we debate with someone, even when we argue with our spouse, you know, and everybody thinks that they're being super rational and that they're viewing the thing objectively and that they're being like Dayanim. This is Shoftim v'Shotrim Titen Lecha B'chol She'orecha. You have to be your own Shofet. And there's so many mitzvos or lavim in the Torah that try to put the Dayan in a box where he won't have any tendency to want to, you know, say one side's right, whether it's a rich person or a poor person or a nebuch person, or, you know, and Dayanim have all these tendencies. So one person's a Rasha. There's a special lav. The Torah is very, very insightful. There's a special lav. There's a general lav in the Torah not to pervert justice. Okay? Well, very nice. But then there's a special lav not to favor a poor person. Well, yeah, you're not supposed to pervert justice. The Torah is very smart. It has to make a special lav because you won't think you're perverting justice. You'll come up with some justification because of your and Bnei Yisrael Rachmonim Heim, and you'll feel Rachmonis of the poor person, and you know, so we'll do it this way, and it'll be mechubad. He won't have to take tzedakah, and maybe he's right anyway. Maybe, you know, you can justify that. And there's another lav, a special lav, not to rule against a Rasha, meaning either, you know, I'm not strong enough to punish him, but this is the way I'll punish him, by paskening against him, and he'll get his punishment. Or how could it be that he's lying? Why should I believe that other person? This guy's a Rasha, this guy's a well-known Rasha, and the other person is a very fine person. I would assume the Rasha is the one that's lying here. See, it's a special love. You're not allowed to do that. A Dayan has to maintain almost superhuman. A Dayan is like Hashem. A Dayan is like a miniature Hashem, so to speak. It's called Elohim. And a Dayan has to maintain very strict impartiality, very strict neutrality. And so Koshkein in our lives, you know, we think we're being very objective and very rational, and we read Ayn Rand, and the reason rules everything. Ayn Rand, I think it is, and reason is everything, and we're very intelligent, and we weigh everything, but it's not true, right? We're a cauldron of emotions, a cauldron of desires, a cauldron of Olam Hazeh. And so he says that's another danger. So as important as it is to use your sechel, realize that it might be a prisoner of the Yetzer Hara, and be careful about that. So therefore it's going to pose questions that you don't know the answer to, because the questions are really not questions. If you really viewed it from an objective perspective, from an objective viewpoint, you would come up with the answer like in zero flat. But like this, you have your agenda, and therefore you think, oh, I don't know the answer, and who knows what. And it's all the product of an agenda. So you have to be careful. He doesn't really give you an answer. He says, if you don't feel capable, don't go down the path that I am always advocating, he says. Really, it's a little amazing. If you don't feel strong enough to make sure that you're indeed being objective, and if you don't feel strong enough that if you can't figure out an answer, you'll go ask someone else, and if you don't feel strong enough to have like that fallback position in mind of emunah pshuta, because you're so into the world of rationalism, so then if someone will point out something that's very irrational in the Torah, or it seems irrational, you'll be on this bahel, and you won't have where to turn, and chas v'shalom, who knows what can come out of that. He says, don't go down that path. Okay, that's the next point. What? Don't go down the path of making your reason primary in understanding Hashem, in understanding Torah, in relating to Hashem. Don't learn Shara Yichud. He doesn't say don't learn Shara Yichud. He says don't go. You know, it's a really, I think it's a remarkable thing to say, because the whole Sefer pushes it. And here he says, you know, he's talking about the Yetzer Hara, and he says, you know, if you don't feel really strong, I mean, how many people could say that they're completely objective about any decision they make? I'm talking about like major life decisions. You know, sometimes I tell people, they say they can't decide. They can't decide. So sometimes it's a good child. I tell them, I have a trick. I don't know, maybe it doesn't always work, but I think it works. I tell them to flip a coin. And while the coin is still in the air, they're going to, and if they're in touch with themselves, they'll, I hope it comes out heads. Right? And they say, okay, heads I'll go and tails I won't go. But I don't know what to do. You flip a coin and then you'll see what you want to do. You'll see. Your heart will be moshech you as it's in the air. You're going to hope it comes out this way. Not always, you know, it's not always like that, but many times. And a lot of the arguments against Torah or against against diktuk b'mitzvahs, certainly, I mean, we hear it from all over, whether it's in Hechsherim or in Sneas or in diktuk b'mitzvahs, I guess we could call it. Yeah, there's arguments against it, and whether someone, false rationality. Yeah. I was just, you know, Two weeks ago, I think, I pointed out that Rav Vaya's methods are now in English. You can buy Bedikas HaMazon, it's called. It's in English. If you look at the bulletin board downstairs, someone's making a, you know, a good, giving a good price for it in order to get it out there. And I said, everyone should really buy one. It's in English, and it's great pictures and great charts. And what? Bedikas HaMazon, that's Hebrew. But it's spelled out in English, Bedikas HaMazon. I mean, you can go into any store and buy it, but if you want it downstairs, there's someone in Ramat Beit Shemesh selling it for a cheaper price. More than you want to know. You'll never eat a vegetable again. So someone writes me, I want to show you a very, okay, as you know, how could it be that in the past generations they didn't know from this? And it, so I said, you know, that's not a rational argument. I said, the bugs are either there or they're not there. You could talk about whether they're there or not. You can talk about how small they, or how large, I should say, how large they have to be. I don't mean large, you know, how big they have to be in order to be halachically significant. At times we do say, just ignore it if you can't see it. Sometimes we say that. That's not, you know, don't quote me on that. Sometimes that's said. It depends who's doing the seeing and what it means to see and what it means to look. And if it's right there in your face and you don't see it, that's not mutter, I'm afraid. It was said by the Aruch HaShulchan, who said it, you know, said it about bacteria and water. Talking about bacteria. He's not talking about those little black dots that, what could it be already? Take a magnifying glass, you'll see what it is. It's there, you can see it with the naked eye, and you can see it move if you look long enough. And in New York, where everybody made fun of the water crisis, and I don't mean shortage, when they discovered the bugs in the water, the copepods, I think it was called, they experimented. You take a glass of water, you put it down, and you look at it long enough, you see the things moving. You could actually see. This is in New York City. So then everybody ran out and bought the filters. Almost everybody. Some postgame insisted it's okay. That's not for me to talk about now. But my point is, like, this person considers himself like a super rationalist, and his point was, so what did they do 100 years ago? How come they didn't care about that? Which is not a very rational argument. The bottom line is, if you're going to use rationality, you have to make sure you're objective and you're free and you indeed can examine a thing objectively. Okay. He says, Chachma is a wonderful, wonderful thing when you use it with the premise that you want to know Ratzon Hashem and you want to know how to serve Hashem. But if you're not using it for that, but you use it to prove your agenda, then it's a terrible machla seichel. This is the Chodesh Avodos talking. Probably this is the only place in the Sefer where he talks negatively about seichel. And you know, everybody will turn to me and say, so how could you ever trust yourself? I hope you would turn to me and ask that. You're just too embarrassed. Okay. I don't know the answer, really. I don't know the answer. But the answer is, as we say, to be introspective, to know yourself, to have a good friend that you can talk things over with, and the other person is maybe not no gay abedover, so they'll, you know, like you're convinced you're right, and you're convinced that it's okay, let's say, I'm just picking, you know, it's okay to do this, even though you've been told it's really not right, or to use this hechsher, even though you've been told that it's not, the standards are not, you should have higher standards, and maybe, maybe not, and you check it out. So you have to have a way. This is life. I mean, you have to have, Chavir Lovin is pointing out now that it's heavy. It is heavy. Because everything we do, we have what we want the result to be. You know, if you're a student of law, like the whole American, you know, the Supreme Court in America, like, right? So for the last 50, 60 years, it's result-oriented. It's terrible. It's a steerer to justice. They decide, and that's how the whole nominating process works. They try to find out if he's a liberal, if he's a conservative. Right? They find out, this is what a big case with the, if you follow the news, I don't know, with Obamacare. So it was very, everybody knows what I'm talking about with the, so it was very, very even. The Supreme Court's going to pass him. So he said, Bemis is unconstitutional, really. But he came up with some chap, it's a tax, he called it, it's a tax. It's a tax, not a knas, or it's a knas, not a tax. It's a tax, right? It's not commerce, it's a tax. Now, and he admitted, like, he wanted a certain result, and everybody's talking, and this is in our lives. This is, I'm saying it over because this is really how we live our lives, and it's what the Chavis Lubavitch talks about. You know, we're a dayan is not supposed to be result oriented. It's usur, it's a stira, it's a contradiction to the whole idea of what a judge is supposed to be result oriented. You have certain, and you have objective criteria, and you let the chips fall where they may. That's what din is. And that's how we're supposed to live, you know. But I wanna, you know, you wanna eat by this wedding, you know. So you'll come up with enough justification to do that. We wanna do this. We wanna do that. So that's, you have to be very suspicious even of your seichel, because many times your seichel is captured. So I was talking about, how do you know? I don't know. There's no magic answer. There's no blood test. Like, everybody's waiting for the blood test for ADD. Right? There's no blood test for ADD. You can't take a blood test or urine test, send it into the lab, and come back and says, yes, you have ADD, or the kid has ADD or ADHD. No. They can only guesstimate by the actions of the person. They don't know. There's no tests. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. The answer is to daven and to try to be objective as possible, to talk it over with a friend or with a mentor or a rav. People do come talk to me about things. They shouldn't be embarrassed. They always start off saying, I'm very embarrassed to ask you this, but but it's wonderful. And really, you know, I'll tell you something, 80% of the people I talk to, 80% of the time, 80% of the people are on the mark. Their heads are screwed on straight, and they're very good mabat on what they're talking about, and they just want confirmation from me. So that's good. That's they get it. Sometimes they get it over the head. That's awesome. But, okay. You have to do, maybe it's an acquired, I don't know. We have to train our children. That's what if we give in to our children always, if we just give in to them, they don't develop that trait, right? We took my son yesterday, I took him out of cheder because he had to go to a doctor. So it took much quicker than we thought. So there was an hour and 20 minutes left to cheder after we finished and we got back. So he didn't want to go. 12 years old. Good boy. He didn't want to go. You can't just, you know, it's cruel. You know, you feel so cruel. Because he doesn't want to go in. He's embarrassed. You know, you walk back in, everybody wants to go, where were you? He's a child. He's not an adult. An adult, you know, takes the rest of the day off. You don't want to go back to work. But, you know, you have to try to... I'm not going to tell you what happened. Ask my wife. You want to... Maybe, please forgive me, maybe we are remiss sometimes at inculcating our children with the ability to think and to discern and to make decisions and to make objective decisions. And sometimes you gotta let them make the wrong decision, but it's important that they should be talk it over with them. You know, that involves spending time with the children, which was a parsha b'chayatzma. You know, you spend time with them, and they should learn to make decisions, maybe based on objective criteria. Nobody teaches these things; they pick it up from the house by osmosis. They hear how you. This is like. Not talked about in parenting classes because it's not a specific thing I can tell you to do, but the child. I used to make fun of parenting classes. I don't anymore. Ever since I see what happened to my children, because I didn't take them, I really don't anymore. It's a seared commentary on the generation that. It's a sad commentary that we have to take classes in Shalom Bayis and parenting and all these things and money management. You know, people used to be normal and live normally. And then now everything is like an effort. It's a commentary. It's a commentary on how messed up we are. It really is. I'm including myself, of course. Like, we have to hustle classes and collar classes and this classes and that classes, and you have to, and now, you know, and now all of a sudden, you know, we have to teach people to be a mensch when they get married. It's more complicated, but not in these meaningful areas. It's more complicated, yes, but it's not more complicated in treating someone with respect. I beg to differ. Maybe what the Chavis Hov, this is what we learned in the Chavis Hov today. That was the first point I made. Yes, life is busy. We're so busy that we don't have time. So we brush off and we rush out and we don't give space and we don't give time and we don't discuss and we don't give courtesy because we're always busy, busy, busy. And that's mamish the first point that I started today with the Chavis Hov that we learned already last week and 2 weeks ago. That's part of being busy, busy, busy. We don't have time for anything. We don't have time to think. We don't have time to think. That's what I tried to stress in the Shaar Cheshbon HaNefesh class, which I don't think I'm being too successful at. Maybe I am. You have to think. It's a chovah to think. Chovah's halvavah. Lev doesn't mean heart in the Lashon of Tanakh. If you've ever learned Mishle, lev is this huge combination of heart, soul, and mind. That's how Tanakh uses the word lev. Just like the lev pumps life into the whole body. The lev is everything. I think of Avigdor Miller Zatzal. He says duties of the mind. That's what he calls his shiurim. He calls duties of the mind. He defines lev as mind, based on psukim and mishle, not just arbitrarily. Anyway, my point: parenting classes. And my point is that I got news for you, women and men, and me. 85% of what your children are, no question in my mind, is what they're sitting on the couch there. You think they're reading a book. They're listening to how you talk to your spouses. They're listening to you talking on the phone. They're listening to how you deal with a crisis. They're listening to how you respond to the neighbor that yours is obnoxious. This is what your kids are picking up. This is what's shaping their character. And that's all. So what's my point? I don't know. Am I making a point? Yes. Why are my kids so messed up? Well, now you know. Now you know. I have wonderful children, thanks to my wife, Baruch Hashem.
I think this reliance what was worrying me last week and what often worries me. And you know, you talk about how we make simple things complicated. And last week in your extraordinary share where you just made many brilliant points, but the same thing comes across.
I'm a Dayan. Flattery will get you nowhere. Yeah.
The same thing comes across that often worries me. You know, you talk about how, like, we give class to Chosin to be a Chosin, to be avenged. The theme of about how, like, and I know the Chovot HaLevavot is a book, and forgive me, last week I thought this was like the class to everybody, the not your group that's been meeting it for you. I know it's a book about asceticism, about like putting away from the world to a large extent, but it seems as though you were saying to everybody that one has to like retreat to a very monochromatic way of living. Like that in a way it was like an instruction to everybody. And I think like when we talk about our children, you said 85% of what they are, like when we all have a difficult task that we are blessed with, of like bringing children to the world and raising them, you see that so much of what they are is imprinted on them. Like they come into the world, like I said, I think of like Rav Deska's bell of truth. I think that they also have a bell that sounds for them, a bell of what makes them come alive, like we all do. And that they're very few people, you know, it's a madrig, like a few Rosh Hashibot, a few Gedolim, and maybe a few personalities who are particularly ascetic personalities who resound to this. And then for the reason that we do, I want to try not make this a monologue, I'm trying to kind of make my point without getting talking too much. We need to all work on what is like the simple truth and what is essential in life, and not to get distracted by it. A lot of people who can't, like they can't confine themselves to just the Daf Gemara. They would go nuts if they did, because they're not built. And you see people as well, like from a positive point of view, who are like lit by music, who lit by art, who lit by like almost by tzalel, like they're things. And I was thinking like afterwards of the Midrash that says like we also call to account for all the beautiful fruit in this world that we don't eat of, and like beauty Hashem creates in this world, we're supposed to.
I totally agree.
So I'm saying it seems like remiss that the Hashkafa is like blasted from on high, like monochromatic world to do anything is like
I don't know. I have to.
Okay, sorry.
You made valid points, but you have to know what's bedrock and what you're building on. If I raise my child, for example, and I raise my child to experience everything in the world that he can because it's wonderful, and it flows Hashem, and Hashem once made all these pleasures for us, that's all true. But I would be making a big mistake if I raise my child that way from infanthood and on. He's gonna end up being a spoiled brat. I have to raise my child with basic values, with differentiating between Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba, and what's an eternal value and what's a temporal value, and what's a need and what's a want. And after he develops that sense, then we can build on that. And says, you know, if you make a bracha and you turn this something that's maybe not necessarily a need, but a want, but you turn it into a stepping stone for Avodas Hashem, because you appreciate that Hashem put these things in the world and you enjoy them, then it's an even higher madrega. But you see, that has to be built on a bedrock of solid values. You can't start with that. If you start with that, you can be sure it takes time for a person to mature and to develop seichel and to be able to differentiate. So what you're saying is true, and you know, and certainly the Chavit Halvavos would be the first. The Chavit Halvavos is, I'm not sure you made a remark there, I'm not sure what you mean, because I have said tens and scores, maybe hundreds of times in all of our limudim of Chavit Halvavos. The Chavit Halvavos is the first one to say that you have to engage the world, and you have to go out there and live in the world, and you have to be an Eved Hashem 24/7, and everything b'chol derechecha da'ehu is like the Chavit Halvavos' mantra almost, and he's teaching you how to do it. Now, in teaching you how to do it, he's teaching us the Aleph Beis first, and Bitachon, and you know, and Avas Hashem, and Shar HaBechina, and this is just like in the Shar Cheshbon HaNefesh, the 30 things that we're learning on Sundays. He is very, very structured, and he doesn't just throw them out there and pick them up haphazardly, and that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, up to 30. You have to establish the foundation first. The foundation first is to say and to realize that we are not entitled to anything and to appreciate everything Hashem does. Then we'll move on and you'll be able to engage the world and to see Hashem in the world and to appreciate Hashem and to enjoy the whole world because you have that rock solid base. Let me just move on so we can get a clear place. Okay, we are going to start from, I need someone's Chavis Halvavos in English so I can say where we're going to start learning the text from. Thank you. So if you have this, I see most people don't have any text.
Yeah, Wait,
yes, because I skipped a lot. And now,
the reason
is because too many people nodding off, and you know. And so I went over his main points, and now here we are. On page 502. Page 502. In the English one, it's 502, and it's the paragraph starts Achim Tireh. Now he's warning us about something else. A new point, totally new point. Let's learn a little just so we can learn some text. We're stopping very soon. Achim Tireh lekabel al atzmecha mitoisvus harashus b'mitzvus. If you want to be more frum than frum, you want to be machmir. This is another Yetzirah. If you find yourself wanting, you want to go that extra mile, you want to go that extra step, the mitzvahs mashet tuchal acher shetemali chovosecho min ha-mitzvos. Now again, this is no simple matter, because what you call a frumkeit might be a basic chiv, might not be a chumra at all. It might be the basic obligation. You just never knew it before, or people don't do it. And it's me'ikr hadin. It's really required by Jewish law. It's not an extra. So to get to this point is quite a mouthful. But that's where he's up to. And he's saying that if you want to do lifnim mishiras hadin, let's say to a man, I'll say, you want to get up at, say, tikkun chatzos. Or, you know, you want to, or a woman, let's say, you know, she's never made challah for Shabbos before. That's maybe a little tricky because maybe there's a Tekonos Ezra that you should. So, okay, let's assume that busy. I have 3 kids in diapers. I'm not making challah. And I'm going to get in the bakery challah. And then she decides, you know what, it's a bad example because there is a minig Yisrael that's brought down in Shulchan Aruch that the woman should make challah for Shabbos, if at all possible. If it's not possible, so it's not possible. If It's not a mitzvah sasei d'oraisa. It's not even a mitzvah midrabbanan. It's a minig that people do, and that's highly recommended. But, you know, we have chumras, and we want to do chumras. Let's say a woman absolutely does not have to daven ma'ariv, and then one day she says, I'm going to start davening ma'ariv. I'm going to daven ma'ariv every day. So he says, you better check yourself out. Just make sure, if it's, where is it coming from? Where is that desire coming from? If it's coming from a place that you want to get closer to Hashem, or is it coming from a place of perhaps one-upsmanship, or it's coming from a place of compensation for your failures in your basic chiyuvim. So you want to sort of whitewash your basic chiyuvim that you're not doing. So if you feel frum and you say, oh, I do this, I do that, then, you know, your conscience, your yetzer toiv doesn't bother you so much about the things you're not doing. So when you want to do a chumrah, I'm adding, Chavis HaLodos doesn't say this, but it's step one, is make sure it's a chumrah. Make sure it's not required. Step two, as he says, is check out where you're coming from. Before you start doing things that are above and beyond, things that are lefnim mishuras adin, things that are indeed chumras, this is a very hard thing to do. But this is chavis halvavos. You see, we're talking chavis halvavos. You see, in Avarim, if you remember, we learned sharavodas elokim. So whether your heart's in the right place or not, you need that mezuzah on the door. It would be very nice, and more than nice, to think about what a mezuzah is and what it says in the mezuzah and how it sanctifies the house. And every time you walk into your house, if you have a mezuzah, the mitzvah of a mezuzah, by the way, I'm not sure how to break this to you, is not to kiss it. That's not the mitzvah. No, it's not the mitzvah. The mitzvah is that you be on your door. The mitzvah is that you be on your door. And it means when you walk into your house, you should be aware that this is Hashem's house. It's a house of the Shechina. It's a house of Hashem Echad. Now, if touching it and kissing it will stimulate your mind, that's wonderful. And then by all means, kiss the mezuzah. But if that's the first and last thought you give to the mezuzah, like you swipe a credit card, you know, you swipe, and you kiss your hand, and you don't even give any thought to the mezuzah. First of all, you're thinking about the cover, and it's pointless. Mamish, pointless. If you don't give any thought, once in a while, once a day, once a week, think about what the mezuzah represents. I always say this is a woman's tefillin. A woman is the bias, and this is the tefillin of a woman. It doesn't have parshas tzitzis there. It has shman voyim shemoa, and it's on the bias, and it's in every door of the house. The house is her domain. She is called the bias. She's in charge of the bias. And mezuzah, she has the mezuzah. It's not brought down as her mitzvah, like, let's say, challah and hadlakas aner. But I think conceptually I'm on pretty safe ground by saying what I'm saying, you know, because the bias is hers, and that's a mezuzah sanctifies the bias. And think about the mezuzah. So before you have a chumrah and make sure you base, so the first thing he says is check out where the chumrah is coming from. Because he's going to say, and we'll continue from here, wait a second, next week is what? Yeah, next week's fine. He's going to say, you know, before you run to chumras, make sure, you don't have to make sure you're 100%, because nobody's 100%, so we would never, ever, ever, ever do any chumras if we had to be 100% first. But make sure you're not lacking in something, that you're not lacking, meaning significantly, that you're not covering up a deficiency, and you have a crack in the floor or on the wall, and you just cover it up with something, and you don't fill it in. So here you can cover it up with a chumrah and feel frum and feel superior to other people. That's also where it may be coming from. And or able to pat yourself on the back. So that's okay. We'll stop here.